8 o'clock. And we're going to our Facebook page, and thank you very much to all of you who've given your whakaaro and your kōrero. Not very many questions, but lots of opinions and comments, I must say, particularly to our weekly guest who joins us every Thursday, our very good friend, our comrade, Bomber Martin Bradbury. Me tukumihi ki a koe, comrade. Thank you so very much for joining us. I think you're muted. Oh, no. Yes, yes. So thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon here on Irirangi Wāntia. Thank you. Love the pōr tai. Nice pōr tai.
Have to
mix it up a bit.
Yeah, that's right. I've got to dress up. I had to trim my beard because people keep thinking I was an Antifa Santa Claus.
Oh, and that's not such a bad thing. Now, the information that we give to so that we can get our vaccine passports. I mean, you know, it's not all that much, but it's information anyway. The organisation that is delivering our passports, the system, you know, that takes all our information and we send it off, where do they come from?
Where do the passwords come from?
No, where's that organisation? So according to our Karaitiana Tai Urdu, who is a data sovereigntist expert, the organisation that's handling all of that is an American company. It's a part of the Amazon company based in the United States. Should we be worried about this?
Look, I mean, there have been real question marks right from the beginning of all of this. Who is getting access to all of this information? Who is getting access to knowing where you're going, what you're doing, who you're seeing? We've been given assurances that it will just be the Ministry of Health. But we've heard these assurances before from various governments of different shades, not just the Labour Party. And after a while, the government kind of looks at that information and all the juiciness that comes with it, and suddenly the police might want access to it, or another state agency might want access to it. And I'm concerned that we haven't had any legislative ring fencing of all of that data and all that information that we are giving willingly, and we're giving in good faith because we all agree that we have to curtail our liberties so that we can get rid of this bloody plague. We understand that, but I have yet, and actually there are quite a few data scientists in New Zealand who are quite concerned about, well, where's all this information going? Now, we are willingly handing it over because it's the right thing to do, but are the government going to do us right by making sure that information is privileged only for Ministry of Health and not the police or any other state agency? And we haven't had an assurance, Claudette, we've had assurances, but it's meaningless. I mean, the minister can say, I assure you that won't happen, but unless there's a law that actually spells out that they can't use it for anything other than Ministry of Health, I'm concerned. I am genuinely concerned with that.
Because, you know, and I guess on one hand, fair enough, the general public isn't privy to any of the tendering processes or, you know, what the deal is once whomever wins this tender. No deals are talked about. I mean, you know, and that's kind of usual, isn't it? But concerns about the safeguard of our information once it leaves shore, because all our privacy rules that, we live by here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, they go by the wayside internationally. As soon as they leave offshore, our privacy laws are our privacy laws. It doesn't belong to them over there. So what also, the question is, what guarantees around privacy then kick in once they leave offshore, not just on this occasion, but any other occasion where we're using companies?
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? There's a sanction that is being applied right now to people who are on welfare, that if there is an arrest warrant out for you, you automatically lose your benefit. And they found that, you know, there's been 20 Pacific Islanders who have had this happen to them, maybe about 33 Pākehā over the last year. and then it's like 450 Māori. And you're looking at this, and this is one of these examples of the interagency sharing of information, which I think creates all sorts of problematic issues. Why should the police be able to step in and get information from social welfare to then punish someone because there's an arrest warrant pending? I mean, that's only going to hit the kids and actually make those people more desperate. So this interagency sharing of very, very private information, this is one of the reasons why people don't trust Pākehā-dominated systems. Am I really handing this information over to the Ministry of Health? Was it going to be used by some other ministry to beat me up with later on? And I think that privacy, interagency privacy, is actually the thing that we need to ensure here, so that these pieces of information, which are very personal to you, are actually being shared only with the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Health people who need to, you know, to gain that access for your health, not for another state agency like Inland Revenue or the police or Housing New Zealand. None of those, I don't think they should be able to share that information. So I think we've got more problems interagency. In terms of the wider existential question, which you're right just to raise, well, you know, if this information is going offshore, who else has access to it? Well, we know from the Snowden revelations that the NSA, which is the secretive spy agency, the technical ones and all the hacking, they've got security and protocols which can bypass any of our privacy and simply take that information as they like. So who, you know, how do we know that anything that's going on to American servers is safe? Well, according to Snowden, nothing's safe.
Yeah, nothing is safe. We would like to actually know. I mean, we, you know, how many people know, I'm not sure, but, you know, is it the responsibility of the government to tell us, the citizens of the nation, that actually, you know, actually don't know?
Well, I mean, this is an ongoing issue that all governments are having with these large transnational companies that are taking our information. We hand it over to them in good faith, not really reading the fine print and see how abusive they can be with it. Facebook being the prime example, I suppose. But this is of concern. We can't have buy-in to a system if people think they're going to get arrested or the state's going to use that information against them in some way. So, you know, I think this is an issue that's only going to get more complex as we get into using passport vaccinations or, you know, to be able to get around. Who's controlling that information flow? Who has access to that information flow? I think the government needs to safeguard us and actually needs to put together some specific ring fence legislation to ensure that information, which you and I are giving in good faith, is protected. That's really essential, I think.
Yeah. And interestingly, about interagency sharing of information. So speaking with Minister Portal Williams, police, there's a now that unit, the police, the guns unit, that, you know, looks at who's licensing what. But there is also a clause in there or a thing that says, I don't know what the kupu pākehā is, but it alerts the office or the doctors. The doctors must inform the unit if they feel that their client who has a gun license is unfit, medically unfit, to hold that license. I think I've got a problem with that, in that how do we, you know, what is unfit? How is it that the doctors are going to know that you've got a gun license unless they're told that you've got a gun license? Do you have to go, unless of course you have to go and get a doctor's certificate, do you, to get a gun license?
Because you don't need a doctor's certificate. I think that when they were passing this and they were rushing it all through, there were, this ties back, of course, to the white supremacist who committed the atrocity in Christchurch. Prior to his terrible day of violence and the obscenity that he caused the our nation, he had accidentally shot himself and had sought treatment but there was nobody who reported that self-injury. He was mucking around with the gun and accidentally shot himself. Because no one reported that or looked into that, there was a feeling that that was a missed opportunity to behave, maybe be able to bring attention onto him. If doctors had to maybe record this, they feel that they might have been able to pick up on it. I think that that's a very long bow to draw and kind of lets the security apparatus off the hook. They should have been onto him well before he got to the point where he accidentally shot himself. And I think relying on doctors as some sort of extra protection against extremism is a bit of a cop-out, to be completely honest. It's the intelligence apparatus themselves who are supposed to be out there looking for these things, not relying on a tip-off from a doctor. That seems quite desperate, doesn't it?
Very much down the end of the chain, doesn't it? I mean, that's sort of like down the end of the chain kind of
stuff. I mean, if your only hope is to catch an extremist who might accidentally shoot themselves before they go out to commit their... I mean, lordy lord, if that's what we're hoping on, I don't think someone's doing their job. Yes. I mean, let's not forget... We pour hundreds of millions of dollars that we never see into a whole bunch of acronyms that we've never heard of who comprise of the intelligence apparatus. It's their job to stare into the abyss and to see if there are dangers out there and to think of the what ifs. And if they're not doing that, well, they're not doing their job. That's their job. They're supposed to keep us safe from those sorts of things. So, I think relying on a doctor seems a bit of an eye roller, to be honest.
I just want to tell you this, so today I was sitting in my lounge today and my partner was on the deck and we saw a police car come down our street, which is a cul-de-sac, and drive out again. And I'm thinking, oh, they're here for our neighbours. And, and then they come, go backwards and forwards, they came back again twice. And then four cop cars came into the street at speed. They jumped out. There were about 10 armed police people, men and women, walking towards our house. They didn't come to my house. They did go to a neighbour. I had my camera out there.
What the hell's going on? Are you okay? Is there a gun to your head now? What's going on? Okay, so they weren't coming for you. They're coming for your neighbour. What happened?
They came to my neighbour. Gunned up people going to my neighbour who are two Pākehā 70-something-year-olds gunned up. Now, why would you go to two Pākehā 70-year-olds all gunned up?
Do you have any idea what they were arresting them for?
No arrests. They sent the women to the door. The women went to the door and the men were macho at the back at the car, but they marched the two girls that went to the door had pistols. And in their holsters, and the boys and another couple of women were out by the car with their big rifles, assault rifles.
Yes.
So I'm thinking, regardless of whether they went to two Pākehā neighbours or whether they were a Māori whānau, and you know what, though? I immediately thought they were coming from my Māori neighbours. My Māori neighbours probably thought that they were coming for us. Yeah. We never expected.
When the cops turn up that armed, it's usually they're hunting brown people, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. In Manurewa, immediately we said, oh, yeah, they're coming for one of our families, our whare. But kahore no, they went to somewhere else. But the point is, why so many guns? In a residential street like this, yes, it's in Manurewa, Clendon. Yeah, it's all of that. But isn't that a little bit over the top? Especially since, we all came out, of our whare. Of course, we would come and have a look. And I've got my camera up there, filming them. And I'm saying, what's going on?
Film this stuff. You have to film it. As soon as the police turn out with guns, you have to start filming. Because you don't know, right? You don't know what silliness might happen if you've got ill-trained cops running around with guns. And I just, I mean, we want our brothers and sisters in the police to be able to come home safely, just like any other worker, and they need the tools. And we know things have gotten a lot more aggressive out there, and particularly with organised crime using guns to protect their pea trade. So we understand these stresses, but you're absolutely right. Unless you know that a gun is going to be a possible part of this, sending people in that pumped up on adrenaline on the trigger, that is just a recipe for disaster. We have a policing philosophy in this country of containment and talking people down, right? And I don't think that's a skill we ever want to lose in New Zealand, because we know that there are some people, particularly in these very radicalized times, and you've got a lot of anti-vaxxers who are frightened and scared and angry. You know, those kind of over-the-top macho alpha, we are the police, you will respect my authority, that kind of mindset is the worst one to try and confront New Zealanders with, because they'll always push back. Doesn't matter if they're in the wrong or not. So, you know, I'm concerned if police are rolling that hard on situations that don't require it, because I think you only need one person to really wig out and think that, you know, oh my God, this is the end of day. There are all sorts of problems with that. I think that we're losing some of that philosophy of containment and being able to talk situations down, because that's the skill set we want from our police officers, being able to contain something and then talk people down, not come in with more firepower and just start shooting up streets. That would be a terrible social policy position if we start doing that more often.
Because I thought the arming of guns, or the arming of our police with guns, meant that there was imminent danger, or that they were, you know, or that there was something unsafe, or, you know, there was danger.
Yeah.
So I mean, if we all come out of our houses to have a look, and they don't say, go back inside your houses, please lock your doors and, you know, stay inside. And if they're not going to say anything like that, there's obviously not any imminent danger. So we're all going to come out and have a look, and, you know, hold our telephones up, and they're just, you know, walking casually around the street with these guns. Why would you do that unless there was, why carry guns?
We don't know what the situation was. We don't know what the intelligence was. They might have got the wrong address. It might be the wrong people. Maybe they got the completely, you know. But yeah, I think it's concerning if you've got, you know, especially right now when people are freaking out, and they're freaking out over the craziest things, and I just think that we need a great big help and heating of calmness, and to just talk people down from their extreme positions. I don't think we should be running into situations, arming it, and possibly conflating stuff. You know.
Thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon.